and I'm going to turn my video on for the first couple of minutes just to show you the books in question. But I'll then turn the video off so you don't need to worry. Okay? Okay. We'll start then?
Please do, yes.
This book, this talk, being about work, is by its very nature about violence, to the spirit as well as to the body. It is about ulcers as well as accidents, about shouting matches as well as fistfights, about nervous breakdowns as well as kicking the dog around. It is above all, or beneath all, about daily humiliations. To survive the day is triumph enough for the walking wounded among the great many of us. Apart from the fact that I said talk rather than book, that's the opening paragraph of this book. Can you see this, I hope? Working by Studs Terkel, which consists of interviews with a number of American workers doing different kinds of job. And what I'm going to do in this talk is to talk about work. But of course, it's not just work. It's a specific kind of work, namely employment under capitalism. I'm going to use primarily the workers' own words. And apart from the Terkel book, I'm going to also be using this one, All in a Day's Work by Danny Danziger, which consists of interviews with workers here in the UK, whereas Terkel's book is American-based. I'll also be talking about Hugh Bainland's Working for Ford, which is about what was the Ford factory in Howard on Merseyside. It's mainly about trade unionism and the role of shop stewards, but there's also some stuff for what workers say. And Norman Dennis et al, Coal is Our Life, which is a sociological study of a Yorkshire pit village, which is given the fictional name of Ashton. The title Coal is Our Life says a lot, of course. It's not primarily quotes from workers, but there are some, and I'll use those. And in addition, David Graeber's Bullshit Jobs, which consists largely of emails from workers to David Graeber saying how pointless their jobs are. And I'll also have one quote from this one, Lynn Pettinger's What's Wrong with Work, which certainly has a good title, if nothing else. Okay. So I'll be talking about workers' own words, and I'll also add a couple of other sources as well, as you'll be seeing along the way. You may well think that what I'm saying is far too negative and focuses on the negative aspects of work, but I will try to put a little bit the other side towards the end of the talk, and perhaps then you can bring up the more positive aspects of work in the discussion at the end. I'm going to divide what I have to say into a number of different topics. Now, I'll begin by looking at, in general, how workers are treated. You'll have to indulge me a bit while I find the right pages in the books. Okay. So this first quote is from Terkel, in the words of a farm worker. I began to see how everything was so wrong. When growers can have an intricate watering system to irrigate their crops, but they can't have running water inside the houses of workers. Veterinarians tend to the needs of domestic animals, but they can't have medical care for the workers. They can have land subsidies for the growers, but they can't have adequate unemployment compensation for the workers. They treat the worker like a farm implement. In fact, they treat their implements better than their domestic animals better. They have heat insulated barns for the animals, but the workers live in beat up shacks with no heat at all. And another quote from Terkel, this one rather different, the work of a receptionist who says, you can't pay someone who does what I do very much. It isn't economically feasible. You're there just to filter people and filter telephone calls. You're there just to handle the equipment. You're treated like a piece of equipment, like the telephone. And another example from Bainan. This is Ford workers in Howard. you're just counted as a number here, treated like a lot of robots. You could be in desperate trouble and they wouldn't help you. So workers are treated like pieces of equipment, or in some cases, worse than pieces of equipment. Let's go on then to look at the second topic I want to deal with, which is stress at work, a kind of violence, as Turkle said in that opening quotation. Okay, so here is this is a quote from Turkle again, but it's a welder at a Ford factory, in fact. When you go into Ford, quote, when you go into Ford, first thing they try to do is to break your spirit. I've seen them bring a tall guy where they needed a short guy. I've seen them bring a short guy where you have to stand on two guys' backs to do something. Last night, they brought a 58-year-old man to do the job I was on. That man's my father's age. I know damn well my father couldn't do it. To me, this is humanely wrong. A job should be a job, not a death sentence. So workers are treated, you know, appallingly. And I guess I don't need to tell most of you that. And another example from Bayman, again, a car factory worker. The factory became a place of desperation. Men studied the vacant job columns in the newspapers, struggling to get out of the plant. Men were more or less afraid to talk to each other on the job. The fear was the sack and the prospect of years out of work, along with the victimized lads. And again, from Bayman, if I can find it. Again, a quote from a Ford worker. The point about this place is that the work destroys you. It destroys you physically and mentally. The biggest problem for people is getting to accept it, to accept being here day in and day out. So you've got low morale from every point of view. You're inflicted with a place of work, and you've got to adapt because it won't adapt to you. So morale is terribly low. But you can build on this, you see. You can't get much lower than hell, and so you can increase morale through the union. Pull together sort of thing rather than dog eat dog. That's why I found it on the trim. We're all in hell. You can get a bond out of that. We're all in it together. That's where the union comes in. But it is, as the guy says, a place of hell and desperation. And another example from Danziger. This is a bank manager. For over 20 years, work has been the most important part of my life. In fact, it overwhelms other things. I found quite early on in my career that I was spending evenings and weekends doing banking work on the lounge carpet at the desk at home. Since then, it has gradually become almost a 24-hours-a-day job. That's being a bank manager, is not the most useful occupation. And another example, a rather different kind of thing from Danziger. This is a driving instructor. Because it's so demanding, you'll find that most driving instructors' marriages don't last because of the hours they do and the problems it can cause. We are working Saturday and Sunday sometimes as well, so that social life is not very good. It can cause a lot of problems. It really best suits the person who is single and hasn't got any other commitments. So work, that kind of work, ruins your social life, your marriage, etc., etc. And I also got a cutting here from The Guardian a couple of weeks ago. There was an anonymous article by a freelance TV producer. And I'll just read you what this person, I don't know whether they're male or female, what this person said in a text to their partner, quote, "I have chest pains. If I die, these are the stats. I have worked 16 days in a row and worked every waking minute for 18 hours of every day. Sue the fuck out of the BBC." So there's a great deal of stress involved in job. Clearly, it varies from one job to another, but a lot of work is extremely stressful. And hold on, let me find the Turkle book again. This is someone who is a copy boy, whatever the hell that is. Something to do with copywriting, I think. How many jobs in this country consist of locking things or counting things, like money, the banks, the cashiers, or being a watchman of some kind? Why in the hell do these jobs exist? These jobs are not necessary to life. And as some of you will know, this idea that many jobs are pointless this is the main theme of David Graeber's book, Bullshit Jobs. He claims an awful lot of white-collar jobs in particular are pointless. I know socialists often say that everything to do with money and credit cards and banks and accounts and insurance and so on is pointless. It doesn't produce anything useful. But Graeber takes that a lot further. And for example, I'll just give one case here. Someone who says, my position at this company was wholly unnecessary and served no purpose whatsoever other than to make my immediate superior look and feel like a big shot, end of quote. That's an example of what Graeber calls flunky jobs, jobs which only exist to make somebody else feel important. And somebody else says, I consider, again from Graeber, quote, I consider a worthwhile job to be one that fulfills a pre-existing need or creates a product or service that people hadn't thought of that somehow enhances and improves their lives. I believe we passed the point where most jobs were these type of jobs a long time ago. And one other example from Graeber. This to do with someone who's looking at banners on websites and things, yeah? And this worker says this, that job taught me the pointlessness compounds stress. When I started working on those banners, I had patience for the process. Once I realised that the task was more or less meaningless, all that patience evaporated. It takes effort to overcome cognitive dissonance, to actually care about the process while pretending to care about the result, end of quote. And another example from Danziger. This is an advertising manager who says, there's no such thing as a future in advertising generally, because no matter what targets you set, things happen, things come along that make it not work. You either get burnt out or pushed out. Grown men flogging Angel Delight, you know it belittles you. You think, how can an intelligent person turn out this garbage to people? After a while, it must get to you. So an awful lot of jobs, not just advertising and not just Angel Delight, are completely pointless. You know? And what about the outcome of all this? What happens after a lifetime of work? Well, it varies, of course, but here is what one American worker told Terkel. I can find it. This is a steel worker in the US. Quote, I was hired in 29 as a water boy. I was 16. I had to be 17, but in those days, they overlooked the little thing here, little thing there. I worked for a year. Then came the crash. I was rehired in June 1933, and I've been inspecting ever since. I'm ready for retirement, but the home we live in isn't paid for yet. The car I'm driving isn't paid for yet. Nothing to show for 40 years of work. And an example from the book on the Coal Is Our Life book, where workers were talking about which kind of shift they prefer. And one miner said, if you're anything like me, you don't like any bloody shift. And all of them agreed that that was the correct answer, as it were. And again, from the book on the mining, what many coal miners told the researchers was that they did not want any son of theirs to work in a pit. You think about it, that's a real indictment of the job, that they've been doing this job for years, but they absolutely would not want one of their sons to do the same job. It tells you how appalling the job is. And that Lynn Pettinger book that I mentioned, and she recalls this conversation with someone. The worker says, what's your book called? She says, what's wrong with work? And the answer is, how long have you got? I hate my job. I hate my boss. I hate the customers. It reminds me perhaps of Dolly Parton in her song 9 to 5. They just use your mind and they never give you credit. It's enough to drive you crazy if you let it. I don't think that we often quote Dolly Parton in party talks, but why not if it's appropriate? Now, I said at the beginning that maybe I was overemphasizing the negative aspects of work. So let's look at some of the positive stuff as well from the same sources. So again, from the book on coal mining. This is here now, the researchers speaking, not the actual miners. Pride in work is a very important part of the miner's life. Old men delight in stories of their strength and skill in youth. A publican or a bookmaker will often joke about the number of tons filled off each day in his establishment by the old men. So there is some pride in your job to some extent. Yeah. And another Danziger quote, this is from a lawyer who says, quote, "I maintain glibly that 20% of my work I would pay to do, 20% I would pay not to do, and 60% is where the bread comes from. Now, that percentage is a bit wrong, one way or the other, as the principle depends on what sort of day I've had." So some of his work he'd be keen to do, but the rest not at all keen to do. Again, on the positive side, this is from Turkle again. This is a farm worker about how hard the work is. But then this guy goes on to say this: "You can't slow down because the foreman sees you're so many boxes behind and you better get on. But people would help each other. If you're feeling bad that day, somebody who's feeling pretty good would help. Any people that are suffering have to stick together, whether they like it or not, whether they be black, brown or pink." So there is some good things about working when workers help each other. And another quote from Turkle. This is a baker. Quote, "Work is an essential part of being alive. Your work is your identity. It tells you who you are." It's gotten so abstract. People don't work for the sake of working. They're working for a car, a new house, or vacation. It's not the work itself that's important to them, but there's such a joy in doing work well. And a further quote from Turkle, which I rather like, although you might not agree with it entirely. Let's see, find it. Yeah. This is a fireman. "I like everybody working together. You chip in for a meal together. One guy goes to the store, one guy cooks, one guy washes the dishes. A common goal. We've got a lieutenant there. He says the fire department is the closest thing to socialism there is." Well, not quite maybe, but not bad, I guess, really. And another example, this one, again, not from any of the books. Manchester Town Hall is currently undergoing a fairly major restoration and refurbishment. It's been closed for 2 or 3 years already and won't open for another year or two. And at Manchester Central Library, there's currently an exhibition about the restoration work. Consists partly of photos of the work and also photos of some of the workers who are doing the work. And in addition, there are quotes from some of the workers. I think it's clear that they wouldn't have included these quotes if they weren't positive, and they haven't included anything negative about how unpleasant and dangerous it is. But I'll just read you what one person says. She's an apprentice project manager. Quote, "Every day offers a new reason to have a great day. Delivering a meeting, speaking to new people, handing over an element of work, or seeing progress in my work area. I'm proudest of managing the lower ground floor, coordinating all trade work on that level, working through blockers, ensuring a high standard of quality, and ultimately driving for completion." So this person sees a lot of positives in their job. Part of the aim of this restoration, by the way, is to train workers and give them new skills and so on. So although I've focused on some of the more positive aspects for the last part, it's clear that overall work, and obviously not just the quotes I've given here, but what people feel all the time, is that work is, for the most part, not all that pleasant. And it's because it's not just work. It is, as I said earlier, it's employment under capitalism. And you need to be employed, you need to sell your labour power for a wage in order to survive. And that's more or less compulsory. And also, as part of that, you'll be subordinate to your manager, the company, the whole system. Wage labour under capitalism is emphatically not voluntary exchange, which is what some apologists for capitalism describe it as. It's very much a big imbalance of power, and one side, the capitalist class, benefit far more from it than the workers do. And my last quote is going to be from the Danziger book. This is a worker, someone whose job is described in the book as criminal. And I'll read what he says. "It's just a job. It's what I was brought up for. I was brought up as a criminal. I don't like harping on about people being hungry and all that carry on, but my first conviction was when I was arrested at 9 years of age at 5 o'clock in the morning, stealing bread out of the bakers. I was stealing the bread because I was hungry, and we used to eat the bread, no butter or nothing, just lumps of bread. That was 50 years ago. I'm celebrating my anniversary, 50 years of criminal." So you can get by without working for a wage, but you have to break the law to do it, really. Okay. What about work in a socialist society? Will it necessarily be quite the same as it is now? Well, firstly, of course, work won't be employment. It really will be voluntary, in the way that work and employment under capitalism are not voluntary. William Morris once made a distinction between useful work and useless toil. And useful work, which he also described as worthy work, he said it, quote, "carries with it the hope of pleasure in rest, the hope of pleasure in our using what it makes, and the hope of pleasure in our daily creative skill." So it won't be long working hours, there'll be plenty of rest. There'll be pleasure in what is produced, and the pleasure in using our skills, and also, I might add, as we've seen, working with other people. So work in socialism will be useful work. It won't be authoritarian. It will be sharing, interesting, and rewarding. It may be difficult to make sure that all work in socialism will meet all the three criteria that William Morris mentioned there, but I think we can say optimistically, perhaps, or hopefully, that work in socialism will be a very different kettle of fish from work and employment under capitalism. Thank you.